Hey there, it's Tom Ryan, founder and CEO of ICR. Before we get into the next episode, I wanted to ask that you subscribe to the show. It'll help us get even more unique and interesting guests on the podcast, and in turn, continue to educate management teams and the growing ecosystem that creates value for fast-growing private and public companies. And while you're at it, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating. Very much appreciated. This episode is brought to you by IEQ Capital, an investment advisory firm that provides a premier endowment-style investment approach and family office services to eligible clients tailored to the unique needs of your family. The founding team behind IEQ Capital are entrepreneurs at heart with an uncompromising focus on clients and investment excellence. With over 30 years' experience as investors, they have a broad understanding of each asset class, deep institutional relationships, and a network that provides assets to exclusive private investment opportunities. Visit www.ieqcapital.com to learn more.
While neither Tom Ryan nor the show receives fees from IEQ Capital in connection with the sponsorship, nor is Tom a client of IEQ Capital, ICR must note the potential conflict of interest in recommending IEQ Capital in light of our potential for a future business relationship. All statements in this episode express the speaker's respected personal views and do not reflect the opinions or review of IEQ Capital.
If there's one thing I've learned in life so far, when doors are opening that you're not knocking on, you got to step through.
Opportunities rarely come with a guide. They appear unexpectedly, and it takes a certain type of person to jump on them without hesitation.
What I have found is that as scary and uncertain as those types of times are, they breed opportunity, right?
Being a public company can be hard. Small missteps can have outsized consequences. I'm Tom Ryan, founder and CEO of ICR. And over the last 25 years, we've helped thousands of companies understand and navigate the stock market and the media. We'll demystify these and other increasingly complex stakeholder groups so you can focus on what you do best, building your company and unlocking your true potential. This is Welcome to the Arena from ICR. When it comes to climbing the corporate ladder in any industry, being willing to try new things and seize opportunities is your fastest track to success. Our guest today has built their career and carved out their place in the industry by doing just that. Today, we're sitting down with Morgan Brennan, who co-anchors CNBC's Closing Bell Overtime, which broadcasts live from CNBC's global headquarters in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. Previously, she was the co-anchor of the 10 a.m. hour on CNBC's Squawk on the Street and co-anchor of CNBC's Squawk Alley. Morgan joined the network in December of 2013 as a general assignment reporter and continues to cover a variety of sectors, including manufacturing, defense, and space, among others. She's also the host of the CNBC podcast Manifest Space. Prior to joining CNBC, Morgan was a staff writer and reporter for Forbes Media, where she reported for Forbes Magazine, Forbes Life Magazine, and Forbes.com. She began her career at Forbes in 2009, holding several positions, including anchor, reporter, and producer for the Forbes Video Network, covering a wide variety of business and finance topics. Morgan has interviewed billionaires, heads of state, thought leaders, and chief executives of multi-billion-dollar corporations. Her profile story on Equity Group Investments Chairman Sam Zell was one of five magazine covers featured on the 2013 Forbes 400 issue. She's also a board member for the nonprofit City Year New York. Morgan graduated summa cum laude from New York University, majoring in social science with a double concentration in anthropology and media studies. Let's enter the arena with Morgan Brennan.
My career has been not linear, anything but linear. It's been a series of coincidences that maybe weren't coincidences. And so if I just step back, I'll say, if there's one thing I've learned in life so far, when doors are opening that you're not knocking on, you got to step through. I grew up in Brewster, New York, so about an hour and a half north of New York City, and graduated from high school a year early. I went to the public high school there. I graduated a year early because I was pursuing a career in the music industry at the time. And this was like the mid to late 90s. This is when there was still like dozens of record companies. Yeah. Napster was just starting to be a thing. And I was kind of in this last wave of teenage pop princess signings to record companies as with a development record contract. And so I pursued that career for a couple of years, the industry was in tumult and was changing rapidly. It was also a very intense industry to be in as a young woman who is a teenager and still figuring out your own way. And I woke up one day and realized that I didn't love it anymore. I wasn't happy about it. I wasn't excited about it. I had half an album finished, and it took some legal gymnastics, but I walked away from the business. My mom, when I was in high school, had said, I'm going to let you pursue this career, but you have to apply to school. Even if you defer, you have to just at least apply to school. And so I had applied to some schools, and so I revisited it. And what actually happened is I tripped on a flyer that came out of a newspaper on the sidewalk, and it was a flyer for the adult school of NYU. I said, you know what? Let me just check this out. Let me see about classes. Let me stay as far away from media as possible and entertainment as possible. And let me just see if I have a brain in my head. And so what happened was I started going to college and I started going to the adult school at NYU. I originally wanted to be an archaeologist and I wanted to be a paleoarchaeologist. And I went on a trip, a summer internship, and realized within the first week that this was so not for me. And it was super fascinating, and it was such an incredible experience, but I realized, like, this is actually not for me, and this is not as glamorous as I thought it was going to be. And so for me, in my very first semester at college, I had a professor who said, you should be doing media, you should be doing journalism. And I was like, nope, not doing it, just came from the music industry, I want nothing to do with any kind of media, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And then I had some of these internship experiences, and I realized, okay, archaeology, not for me, but maybe anthropology, maybe cultural anthropology. And then I started studying that. And what's interesting about cultural anthropology is that you learn how to do ethnographies, you learn how to identify your own biases and sort of put them on the shelf, and how to ask questions and sort of be, you know, open and willing and curious about other people and other people's life experiences. And then you compile all that information, you put it together, and you tell a story.
Yeah.
It's very much the same theories and the same kind of tenets of journalism.
Yeah.
And so little by slowly, through my college experience, I sort of got the journalism bug. And so I was very lucky. I got into an internship at Newsweek International in my last semester at college. So I just come from the music industry, which had just gone through this massive disruption and couldn't figure it was still going through disruption, like just free fall.
Yeah.
And here I am going into magazines at the exact time when the world is collapsing. Economic crisis.
The internet will never affect the magazine business.
Exactly. And that's happening on top of everything else. Exactly. And so it was literally, I was walking into this unpaid internship as a fact checker for Newsweek International, and I'd walk into the office and there would be literal pink slips on desks. And I was like, what am I getting into? What am I doing? What I have found is that as scary and uncertain as those types of times are for industries going through disruption, there's also, they breed opportunity, right? And so I sort of jumped in there. I did a lot of fact checking on economic stories and business stories and housing stories, and sort of like learned trial by fire about these, you know, these different industries and these different things that were happening in real time, and just sort of took on as much as I could. You need a byline, you know, you need a story written about something in the back of the magazine, like put me in, coach. And so I just worked as much as I could, learned as much as I could, and really lucked out because I got hired at Forbes 2 days after college graduation.
Really?
As a secretary.
Yeah.
Making $35,000 a year and still bartending on the weekends.
Yeah.
But I got my foot in the door.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's amazing. So much of life is just like putting yourself at risk. And like, if you get an opportunity, you just jump at it as hard as you can. When did you go to kind of your first news on air job? Like, how did that evolve? How did you get there?
I started working at Forbes. I scheduled for the video department at Forbes, and similar thing, put me in, coach, let me write for the website, let me help learn how to produce, all this stuff, working extra hours, anything I could to learn the process. One day I got a call from our editor, and she was like, the on-air reporter for Forbes Video Network at the time isn't available, and we just got an opportunity to interview the CEO of Dr. Pepper Snapples and with Kiss, because they're getting ready to debut their first ever commercial for the Super Bowl. They're at the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Can you go down and ask some questions?
Yeah, were you just like terrified?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, but you got to do it. You got to do it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? The door is open. You weren't knocking. You got to step through.
Yeah.
So I went down to the New York Stock Exchange. At the time, it was still very busy, right? This is 2009. And here I am sort of green as can be, like wading into the center of the floor and trying to do this very serious interview with the CEO of this, you know, beverage company. And I've got Gene Simmons in full regalia, platforms, everything, standing on my other side, and he's sticking his tongue out in my ear as I'm asking, trying to ask serious, you know, questions.
Yeah.
Why put this money to work for a Super Bowl ad?
That's so badass, though, for your first, like, on-air thing, like, with Gene Simmons and everything. It's, like, amazing, right? You couldn't make that up.
No, you couldn't make it up. That was my first interview. My second interview was the CEO of Freddie Mac at the time, which was 2009, and they had gone through a string of CEOs. So I got thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool and had to start learning and cramming and getting as, you know, familiar with all of this really difficult material as possible as it was happening in real time.
I wanted to ask you what qualities you think got you to where you are today. It's like a really broad question, but I know you credit working in the service business, maybe waiting tables. What kind of things do you think really got you to where you are?
I think service industry is a really good one to point to. And having had that experience, having worked with people, having interacted with people, having to troubleshoot, having to multitask, having to treat people with respect, even if they're not treating you with respect, kind of keeping your side of the street clean and being incentivized, you know, like working hard and being incentivized.
Yeah.
Even if the payoff isn't immediate, waiting tables, bartending, hosting, all that kind of stuff really helped shape my ability to connect with people and build my network today. Somebody comes to the studio, they're going to be on set with me. Like the first thing I'm doing is going in the green room to greet them and spend time with them.
Try and make them feel comfortable.
Sounds so basic, but it's those little things that go a long way. I heard a really good phrase recently about kissing up and punching down. And I think there's a lot of people in my industry and probably many industries that kiss up and punch down. And I think you can really tell who a person is based on whether they do that or not. And so the people who get me onto TV and make me look smart and put together on TV on a daily basis, those are the people that matter the most.
And should be treated as such, right?
Exactly. And so to me, like, you know, going through the service industry, you know, working in that capacity, interning, going up the ranks is a very powerful thing. And it's probably front and center for me on a daily basis today.
Yeah. What was the trajectory at CNBC? And how did you go from the first year at CNBC to kind of where you are today?
When I was at Forbes, I moved into a reporter role and was writing feature stories for the magazine and stuff for the website. And I had an editor and he came to me and he said, "We do the show every weekend called Forbes on Fox. Do you want to try out for it?" And I was like, "Absolutely not. Like, this is entertainment.
Yeah.
I'll do journalism, but I'm not getting into anything that could be entertainment related."
Yeah.
And I did it. I did it begrudgingly. Because again, this was a door that opened that I hadn't been knocking.
Yeah.
And I found myself like making my TV, my linear TV debut, debating the flat tax with Steve Forbes. So I was like, how did this happen? How did I get here? It was really fun. And so I started doing more TV contributions on behalf of Forbes. And so that's sort of how I got my feet wet. Now, never in a million years did I think that like an opportunity would come up at like the premier financial news network.
Yeah.
But it did. And I got hired as a general assignment reporter. And I came in, it's funny, when I get down on myself, because you know, no day is perfect.
Yeah.
Live TV is the cure for perfectionism.
Yeah. Do you think the average person who's watching knows when you make a mistake? Obviously, they're like, "Oh, wow, I lost my train of thought." But like, you probably scrutinize yourself way more than anybody else would, right? I mean,
oh my gosh. Yes. I am like my worst critic. And I think it's a skill to be on TV.
Totally. Oh my God.
So I go back and I watch tape. If I think something was really good, I go back and I watch it and I'm like, okay, what did I do well there? What could I repeat? And so it's like I'm constantly working on my, for lack of a better term, performance on a daily basis. But when I really want to feel better about myself, if I'm down on myself on a certain day, I go back and I watch tape from that first year at CNBC. Because I mean, when you're a feature writer at a magazine, you're spending months, weeks and months on a story. You're sourcing to, you know, with 30 people, you're fact checking again, then the fact checkers, everything is so gone over and so perfect before it goes to print. And you have so much time. And with TV, it's the exact opposite, right? It's like, how do you take all that nuance, all that context, and boil it down to a 90-second hit?
Navigating the demanding world of TV reporting, especially live broadcast, presents a pretty unique set of challenges. From the pressure of being on camera to the potential for making mistakes and adapting to different subjects, each day brings a new hurdle. I was curious about what Morgan feels is the biggest challenge in her fast-paced line of work.
I would say it's a little bit of all of the above. When I first started working for CNBC, one of my colleagues said to me, sleep now, because you're not gonna sleep once you start this job.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. But you don't sleep, especially when you're a reporter. When you're an anchor, your hour is a little more fixed. But when you're a reporter, you're at the behest. And
yeah,
you keep a travel bag. I would keep a travel bag under my desk. And there have been times when I was a straight general assignment reporter where I would walk in and they'd say, you're getting on the next flight to North Dakota. You're going to go do some reporting in the Bakken.
It's exhilarating, though.
It's so exciting. It's so thrilling, but it's also so grueling.
Yeah.
Actually, I will tell you, you hosted me at your ICR conference back in January,
yes,
which I was thrilled to attend. Got to do some interviews on TV.
Yep.
Got to participate in a fireside panel that evening. The morning started for me at 2:17 a.m. or whatever it was, 2 a.m. we'll say, because a rocket launched, a new rocket making its first flight for the first time 45 minutes away in Cocoa Beach.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those things where it was kind of coincidental, but I was there, and so I covered it. So my morning started at 2 a.m., and I started doing live TV hits at like 6 a.m., and started my morning in Cocoa Beach. It ended up being, by the time I got home that night, it ended up being a 23-hour workday.
That's insane.
Now, that's extreme.
Yeah, but it happens.
But it happens. So I would say that is challenging, finding the stamina and the energy when you have to be on TV. And then I would say, to your point, like also just making sure you're so read in and you know everything that's happening to the best of your ability, even if it's not going to make air.
Yeah.
Because even if you're not going to cover it, something could happen, right? There could be breaking news and you have to deliver information in real time accurately. Because not only does that information matter, but people's money is on the line based on that information too. And to me, that's probably the most stressful, important thing about what I do.
So obviously, when you talk about the challenges of your job, it's kind of their challenges, but it's like a good kind of challenge. But like the best part of your job is you've met like the most insane people ever, right? Like how would you describe the best part of your job? Do you like being recognized?
I mean, it's always fun when you get recognized, right? Like that's
totally
fun. And then you're like, okay, so I'm not just talking into like the black box that is a camera. I think for me, the best part of my job is the fact that like no day is the same.
Yeah.
No single day is ever the same. I get to learn. Like I feel like I get paid to learn and then take all that information and like disseminate it. For me, I like the magic of TV is just being out in the field.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love doing that as a general assignment reporter and the storytelling and the being able to point to stuff. And I love it even now as I'm one of the anchors that will still get on a plane and go do that, like with a rocket launch, for example.
I love the fact that you've kind of embraced the whole space thing. Tell me about that podcast.
Oh my gosh. Space is to me like, it's obviously frontier tech, even though it's been around for decades. You have this sort of new and emerging commercially driven space economy. And you had this flurry of companies that went public via SPACs in the last couple of years.
Yep.
So now you have these stock tickers attached. And a good example is like Intuitive Machines, which is a smaller cap company, but like they just landed a lunar lander on the surface of the moon. First time one of these spacecraft made in the US has been back to the surface of the moon in more than five decades and made history because it's the first time a privately owned, commercially made lander or spacecraft has been on the moon. And as all of that is happening, and as they're landing in real time, you got a stock board up and a ticker, and you're watching the ticks, and you're seeing the stock trade as this moment in history is being made. It's bananas. You know, Virgin Galactic, they do their first, commercial flight, and Richard Branson goes to space, and it's like you've got a stock chart up.
Yeah.
Investors, reacting to what's happening in real time in this like space tourism market. It's still so young. It's still so new.
That's what's so cool about it. And
it's uncharted territory, right?
Yeah. I mean, you see it better than anybody. There's some people doing the most incredible things that you've ever heard of in like the energy transition and space. And like, it's just inspiring, I think,
I agree. I think it's just an exciting time to be covering all of that.
And the podcast is called Manifest Space with Morgan Brennan.
Yes, it comes out every Thursday. Sometimes we do bonus episodes and we take a very multimedia approach. So we do the podcast, we bring some of the interview to my show as well. We'll write articles. It makes the rounds. So that's what's exciting about the podcast. It's exciting because it's space, but it's also just exciting because it's the first time CNBC has enabled a standalone original content podcast, and we utilize it across all these different verticals. And that's kind of where the future is headed.
It's awesome. What's been your favorite interview to date or story?
I will say, I got to interview Jeff Bezos right after his space flight. That was wild.
That's wild.
And that was only a week and a half after I interviewed Richard Branson after his space flight. So that whole week in 2021, summer of 2021, was just wild.
Yeah.
And so that was like super fun. It was kind of the meeting of all the worlds. The other thing I'll say is I've had this like great privilege to be able to be the person who has sat down and done really kind of the tough interviews with CEOs of companies that are in crisis. And so there's been a string of those over the years. And I think it happens because I'll ask tough questions, but I will always give somebody a fair shake.
Yeah.
And I think the anthropology background enables me to approach some of these moments and some of these companies at these key moments in a way that is a little more unusual.
Are you someone who naturally can just bore into a series of very tough questions, or did you have to train yourself to do that?
That's a great question. It's a balancing act because you want to be able to ask the tough questions, but you do want to be balanced. And there's a difference between a tough question and a gotcha question.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is you sit down with somebody, like the most important thing you can do is listen.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, companies know where they stand. CEOs know if their company is in transition or having a tough time. And I always notice that anchors they won't really make it their question, right? They'll say like, well, some people would say this. How would you address the things that other people are saying? It seems like a little subtle technique, but it is a little easier of a way maybe to deliver something tough.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's tough to get to that point. And I think, you and all the other anchors at CNBC do an amazing job of that. One thing I wanted to cover with you, Morgan, is, at ICR, we work with a lot of companies. Our job is to kind of elevate their brand or them personally or whatever it is. I think that some CEOs are more scared of the media than they are of Wall Street, like investors. What kind of an executive makes for like a really good interview? And do you think most executives are apprehensive to kind of get out there, particularly in a live interview? We have a lot of CEOs who listen to the podcast. Like, how would you educate them on like, what can they do to make your job easier? What makes for the best interview and why should they do it?
There's a lot there. Here's what I'll say. Some of my favorite interviews are, and some of the interviews that are most well-received are interviews with like founder CEOs,
yeah,
right? Entrepreneurs who are talking about their baby, because maybe they're going to be, even if the company is publicly traded, it's their baby. And so they're going to be very straightforward. They're going to like put some like real thoughts and insights and context out there. And that always makes for a good conversation and a good interview. And there's such a thing as being too media trained. I think a little media training goes a long way, right? And you want to be able to like talk in sound bites on TV, and you want to be able to get your point across in a coherent way. You want to be able to anticipate where the conversation could go. All of that's great. And it is actually very helpful, because if you're not media trained and you come on and you just start talking and we're trying to cut you off and we can't even get another question in, there's a balance. Equally tough is when somebody's been so media trained that like, they're not actually saying much of anything,
right,
or giving any kind of context or any kind of color or any kind of insight. Maybe so media trained that they're not even actually answering your question. And so that can be a challenging interview.
I love people who are honest too. It's like you've got hundreds of thousands of trades every day in stocks. You've got brilliant portfolio managers who have the best information. Like, they're going to find out the truth. It's up to you when it comes out, right?
That's right. And I think that's the power of the media, that maybe sometimes CEOs that are a little more media risk averse to doing interviews,
yeah,
I think that's the power of it, especially if like your company is going through something difficult. I think when you come out, when you own it, and when you sort of add your voice, you help shape the narrative.
Yeah.
When you don't, somebody else is going to fill that void with a narrative.
And they're going to get it wrong and you're not going to like it.
That's right. And so it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy with the media,
yeah,
right? Because there's times where media gets the story wrong or doesn't have the right context around it or is missing something or is overlooking something. But if you haven't helped get out there and have that interview, or like have your comms team get out there, even if it's on background or whatever, and help shape, you got to take responsibility for the fact that media has gotten some of that wrong. A great example of this, I was meeting with a comms chief for a very big company in financial sector earlier this week. And one of the things they were saying was that Their earnings come out, they're very complicated. There's different segments, there's different line items, there's different charges, and that they would not talk to the media, they're not anything. And then they would get really frustrated because somebody would go on to break those numbers, those earnings on CNBC, you know, 90 seconds after they've dropped, yeah. And they would miss something or they'd get the context wrong. So this comms chief came in and said, well, are you doing like an embargoed media call or background media call? And they were like, no. And he's like, well, you're prioritizing the Wall Street analysts. And yes, they're important, but don't forget that they're going to read and or turn up the volume on anything that like the financial news media says first before they even go into that call. So if you want the context out there and you want the information out there, you need to do a background call with the media before those numbers cross or right after those numbers cross.
Yeah.
And it changed, according to this person with this company, it sort of changed the way those earnings were getting reported, and it started to have a more holistic effect in terms of what was getting out there, how it was getting out there, and how it was shaping some of the questions they were then getting from analysts on the call.
Yeah, and you know, look, it's the immediacy of information that we're in. When I was a sell-side analyst for 10 years before I started ICR, I used to get, I'm embarrassed to say how old I am, but I used to get press releases in the mail. You could very easily like focus on one stakeholder group at a time. Like you'd say this to the Wall Street, you'd mail this to Wall Street, you'd talk to the media about this, you talk to employees. Now everybody sees everything simultaneously. And if you're not controlling your information as a company, how it comes out, how it's disseminated, you're gonna be back on your heels and you're gonna make a mistake and it's gonna possibly cost you your job. Those things unravel like really quickly. You're a product to them in a way, and you have to present yourself as such, and you have to understand how people want that product packaged. And that's the real key to building credibility and all of that stuff. So
I agree. I think that's so well said.
My last question, Morgan, a lot of people want balance in their life. I know you have three kids like I do. I think people who are overachievers say they want balance, but they secretly don't. How do you juggle the whole thing, like with the family and doing this and having to be on and having like a little bag under your desk where you have to go places? How do you do all that?
I don't do it. And I think that's kind of, I kind of think that's the short answer.
Yeah.
My husband does it. My in-laws and,
yeah.
You know, at times parents and our live-in nanny, they do it. My kids do it because sometimes they have to shoulder things. Yeah, so it's like we all do it.
Yeah.
And I heard this really great phrase from a tech CEO not that long ago. He was talking about his parents and his mom having this big career at a time where a lot of women weren't having big careers,
yeah.
You know, maybe two generations ago. And he was saying that his father invested in his mother's career. And that's kind of how I see it. Like my husband and I invest in each other's careers.
Yeah.
And we invest in the family. And so it's like, I have three priorities on a daily basis. The priorities are family, marriage, and career.
Yeah.
And so there are some days where it's like family's number one, that is my focus. And then the other stuff I'm filling in the blanks around it. And there are some days where it's like, listen, you know, marriage or career or, you know what I mean? And so all three of those things need to get fed. I guess it's kind of going back to this idea that every day is different.
New opportunities present themselves when you least expect them. It's not easy, but following their lead and embracing discomfort, putting yourself out there, can lead to big career dividends. It's that kind of fearlessness that has helped Morgan knock down many doors and get into a fascinating niche journalistic focus on the space economy, otherwise known as frontier tech. At Welcome to the Arena from ICR, we're working really hard to bring you exciting guests and great content. If you found this episode insightful, please subscribe to the show on your podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. The more the show grows, the more interesting voices we can have on the podcast, and in turn, that should demystify a lot of the stakeholders around public companies and soon-to-be public companies. Thank you so much for listening. I want to thank Morgan Brennan for joining us on the show today. It was great to get her insights into media relations and learn her career story. With her incredible drive and remarkable instincts, I really just think she's getting started, and that's no joke. This is Tom Ryan. We'll see you next time back in the arena.
References to specific stocks are not intended to be recommendations for specific trading behavior. Comments presented on this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only, and do not represent opinions or recommendations on whether to buy, sell, or hold shares of a particular stock. All investors are advised to conduct their own independent research into individual stocks before making a trading decision. In addition, investors are advised that past stock performance is no guarantee of future price performance.
This episode is brought to you by IEQ Capital, an investment advisory firm that provides a premier endowment-style investment approach and family office services to eligible clients tailored to the unique needs of your family. The founding team behind IEQ Capital are entrepreneurs at heart with an uncompromising focus on clients and investment excellence. With over 30 years' experience as investors, they have a broad understanding of each asset class, deep institutional relationships, and a network that provides assets to exclusive private investment opportunities. Visit www.ieqcapital.com to learn more.
While neither Tom Ryan nor the show receives fees from IEQ Capital in connection with the sponsorship, nor is Tom a client of IEQ Capital, ICR must note the potential conflict of interest in recommending IEQ Capital in light of our potential for a future business relationship. All statements in this episode express the speaker's respected personal views and do not reflect the opinions or review of IEQ Capital.